There was a stir and bustle in the little colony, which greatly surprised and pleased me. Some boats had come home from the sea, and their fish was being received and weighed by their respective factors. Others were preparing to go to sea. Some of the men were stretching and drying their lines. Others were melting livers into oil, while some stood with folded arms resting after their toil and talked to their comrades with a short pipe in their mouths. And yet others were busy cooking victuals. The whole was like a great ship, for there were none present but weather-beaten seamen. Not a woman was to be seen in the hamlet.
Stennis. Add booths and lodges within the toon of Stennis. About 33 lodges occupied this season in the same number of boats. Some years mair boats and lodges, some years less. Number one booth was occupied by Mr. Lisk's factor, was built 20 years ago by Mr. J. Gifford. From him it came to Mr. John Sheen, by whom sold it for £6 to Mr. Lisk. Number two booth occupied by Robert Anderson as a shop. The roof kept on winter and summer, was built by Peter Harwick. Seems to have been just assumed possession, by Mr. Anderson, without permission from Harwick or anybody. Number three booth, occupied by Mr. Sharp, O'Olibury's factor. One big house and roof kept on and kept as a shop. Built with stain and lime by James Flack and assumed possession, by Sharp. Number four booth, occupied by Gilbert Irvin. Built with stone and lime and shelved. Was built by the Hungister mine. Taken possession, by Irvin, it is supposed with their permission. Paying no rent to the proprietor. Number five booth, Mr. Gifford's Inn. The fishermen spread their lines over the girths of the firm fully 200 yards up from the beach, perhaps over a couple of acres of the best grass ground of the place.
I hereby engage and bind myself to deliver to you all and whole of my share of fish caught in the summer fishing boat along with James Thomason. These fish to be delivered to you when cured and dried ready for market. And should James Thomason and the other men not deliver their share, yet I am bound to deliver mine or the value thereof if you so desire. In short, you have full power over all my share of the fishing we make, taken during the year 1861. Andrew Clunas.
On the stony beach was a long array of boats interspersed with square piles of fish in various stages of curing, while huge wooden troughs for salting, sea boots, waterproof jackets and fishing lines were lying around. The beach at Stennis was exactly that which is best adapted for the process of fish curing. the large round stones of which it was composed admitting of a free current of air beneath the piles of fish, while the wet was carried speedily away in the interstices of the stones. In the centre of the beach rose the two stories bode or booth, the storehouse for the fishermen and the temporary abode of the factor. On either side of this house were ranged irregular rows and clusters of huts, curious turf-covered cabins with walls constructed of uncemented stones and roofs of turf, the dwelling of the fishermen during their sojourn at the station in the fishing season. We entered one of two of these cabins, and in one of them found some men who had just returned from the deep-sea fishing. There was a turf fire in the centre of the low hut, the smoke from which escaped by a hole in the roof, and around this fire the men were seated on large stones or heaps of sod. Their beds were simply benches of turf, and the atmosphere was close and stifling. For all this, these men are in general healthy, and I believe they are more temperate than formerly, consuming more of coffee and of tea than whisky. From the lodges, we ascended to the booth to see the factor. In the upper story, we found a most miscellaneous collection of articles for sale, all more or less for the use of the fishermen. Clothes and provisions were intermingled with fishing lines, hooks and tubs of salt, and a cask or two of inferior whisky.
Stennis, Tuesday, 13th May, 1890. James Johnson of Ewer, margarine, 1 shilling. Hoe, 7 pence. Plate, 2 pence.
Stennis, Wednesday the 14th of May, 1890. Arthur Johnson of Finsgirth. Plates, 1 shilling and 6 pence. Spoon,
Stennis,
6 pence.
Tuesday the 19th of May, 1891. Christopher Engstrom of Aviskirk.
Stennis, Wednesday,
20th
of May, 1891.
William Tullock of Stennis.
Andrew
Watts, 7 pence. Lyme, 2 shillings.
Arthur Johnson of Stennis. 2.5 pence.
Thomas Sheen of Hoos. James
Johnson
of Ewer. Lawrence Anderson of Capon.
Knife,
7 pence.
Pencil,
barley,
9 pence.
Andrew Jimmison of Tangwick. Garnes,
James Johnson
of Williamson of
Braerie. 7 pence. Pencil, 1/2 pence.
5.5 pence.
Thomas
Anderson, 2 pence.
Lines,
nails,
4 shillings.
1 shilling,
rope,
7 pence.
9 pence. For splicing shrews.
Well, amongst the ravens,
George Anderson of Leeskall. Lines, 2 shillings.
James
Anderson of Ewer.
Lines,
ship, 2 shillings.
4 pence.
6 pence.
Matches,
line, 9 pence.
Arthur Anderson,
Peter Thompson of Downing. 2 shillings. And 4.5 pence.
1 shilling.
Double eight.
We understand agree to prosecute the line fish and to cure our own fish, to get boat and line for measure, shade, and company, and hiring in the first instance, and should we fail to dispose, to purchase either boat or line, the highest to be placed, the credit of lines or boat, or both, as we may be able, or should we not be able to buy, we are not to be charged more than the usual and customary hires for boat and lines. 22nd January 1861.
The men employed at the half, or the fishing station, are generally the young and hardiest of the islanders. 6 tenants join in manning a yawl of 6 oars, from 18 to 19 feet in keel and 6 in beam, which is also furnished with a square sail. After waiting for a fair wind or the ceasing of a storm, the most adventurous boatmen give the example to their comrades, starting off in their yawl and taking the first turn round in the course of the sun. They are instantly followed by the whole fleet, each boat striving to be the first at the half, often 40 or 50 miles away. The depth to which the line are fished for varies from 50 to 100 fathoms. After the lines are all set, which in moderate weather requires from 3 to 4 hours, the fishermen rest for 2 hours and take their scanty sustenance. Their poverty allows them no richer food than a little oatmeal and a few gallons of water, for the Shetlanders can rarely supply themselves with spirits.
Ling received at Stennis in 1812.
And James Hagel, Thomason,
66
15 Ling,
700 weight.
100 weight.
1 quarter and 9 pounds.
Lawrence Ingster, 60 Ling, 600 weight. 102
Ling,
1,600
weight.
Donald Reed,
2 quarters,
65 Ling.
Lawrence Robinson,
weight, 2 quarters,
79 Ling.
James Thomason,
700 weight,
50 Ling,
1 quarter,
500 weight, 3 quarters.
Esther Lawrenson,
William Johnson,
34 Ling,
34 Ling,
600 weight,
300 weight,
3 quarters,
18. John Tullock,
Christopher Jameson,
29 Ling, 300 weight, 3 quarters,
100 weight.
Christopher Jameson, 35 Ling,
300 weight. Andrew Herkelson,
2 quarters,
105 Ling.
John Sanderson,
1,000 weight,
44 Ling,
2 quarters,
400 weight, 1 quarter.
Lawrence Johnson,
Arthur Lawrence,
9 Ling,
90 Ling,
1,100
weight, 900
weight,
1 quarter and 14 pounds,
23 pounds.
Gideon Black, 26 Ling,
300 weight, 1 quarter, 24 pounds.
Andrew Anderson, 79 Ling,
700 weight, 3 quarters, 20 pounds.
The curing and drying of fish taken at the Stennis Half is conducted with great regularity, a bell ringing for the cessation and resumption of labour. When the boat comes on shore, the ling, cod and tusk that have been taken at the half are in a gutted state with their heads taken off. These are delivered by weight to the factor. Then a splitter with a large knife cuts a fish open from head to tail and takes out half the backbone next to the head. He now hands it over to the washer who, with a heath brush and the assistance of seawater, clears away every particle of blood. When all the fish are split and washed, they are allowed to drain, after which the salter places at the bottom of a large wooden vat a stratum of salt, and over it one fish with the skin side uppermost, until the chest is filled with alternating layers. Above all are laid heavy stones. After some days they are taken out and next spread out, skin side uppermost, on a beach of large stones until dry. They are afterwards built into a large steeple. A well-cured fish is said to be of greenish white, and when held in the light is translucent.
December 6th, 1862. Having this day settled my account with you Messrs. Hay and Company, and finding that I am indebted to you in the sum of £16.10 and 8 pence sterling, not being able to pay, I hereby sell you my half share of a mare and horse foal, now being in my charge. It is also understood that the lines and net in my possession are yours, and they have never been paid for. Edward Harper.
having this day settled my account with you, Messrs. Hay and Company, and finding I am deep in debt to you, I hereby sell and make over to you my half of a 6-year-old mare, and you may dispose of my half as you see fit. Walter Ingster.
Edward Charlton's Journal, 1832. As I was leaning over the bow, two yawls full of strange-looking mortals broke through the mist, pulled the stern of the ship without hailing, and disappeared into the driving fog. They were Shetland fishermen, the first I had ever seen, and I shall never forget the impression their strange garb made upon me. Dressed in their skin coats and breeches, with their nether limbs encased in high boots, they rather resemble the pictures we have seen of some of the Eskimo tribes. The long fair hair of the Shetlanders from beneath their large pendant caps of variegated worsted certainly gave them a more picturesque appearance than the inhabitants of a still more northern clime. These boats, extremely sharp at both ends, with an extraordinary spring fore and aft, were not the least curiosity about them, and the rapid glance I caught of the whole, as they burst through the fog and were quickly reinvested in its heavy canopy, imparted an air of romance exceedingly in accordance with my feelings of the enterprise.
Charlton, Journal, 1852. The fog, though it had cleared around us, still hung heavily over the land and partially obscured the huts and fishing station of Stennis. Suddenly a boat dashed out of the mist, filled with the well-remembered forms of the fishermen. There was the red nightcap of the father of the family and the gaily coloured woollen caps of the young men, but I looked in vain for the old skin coat, without which few men went to sea in 1832. There was not one now to be seen. The Mackintosh coat and the oil canvas jacket had effectually replaced this old relic of Scandinavia. Perhaps a few still linger in North Yell, but I could not find a single one at Stennis. Boat after boat now followed, and it was evident that the fishermen were going out to the far half, or most distant fishing ground, at least 30 miles from land. One boat, the first we met, passed very near us, and I strained my eyes to catch a well-remembered face, that of Lawrence Robertson, my old companion at Hillswick.
9th of July, 1830. Andrew Williamson's boat was swamped coming in for the half yesterday. Himself and three others were drowned. John Regland's boat has not come in, and there's no hope of them. Yesterday, it is said, was the worst weather the fishermen in North Mavon have seen this 20 years past. 10th of July, no word of John Regland yet and no hopes of them. 12th of July, no account of John Regland's boat. It appears they are lost. A heavy loss for the south quarter of North Mavon. 14th of June, 1850, wind north-northeast, a hard breeze, some showers. Three boats missing from Stennis, Peter Blance, John Williamson and John Dalle. They did not come ashore yesterday and much fear is entertained for them. 15th of June, John Dalle's boat got to Papa and came into Stennis this afternoon. No news of the other two yet. They are lost and eight widows left. Three of the men were brothers-in-law, namely Thomas Gifford Johnson, John Johnson and John Thompson.